You're listening to Trending. This is Timmeri Millington. I'm here with my co-host Chris Mueller, and I was just talking about how two big things happened this weekend: the start of prom season and the opening of the Avengers.
Man, I love prom season. I love going out to eat with my wife and seeing all the decked out young people there at the restaurants. It is one of my favorite things to do, quite frankly.
My brother totally pulled off this awesome bow tie, red jacket to his suit, or is it technically a tux? It's a tux, right?
I believe tux for prom. Yes,
for prom.
Very formal occasion.
Very formal. And then it was so beautiful to see how elegantly all of the young women were dressed in the group with them. I was so happy to not see super raunchy dresses, because it's the occasion and the opportunity to dress up, and it breaks my heart when it's like, girls, you have this one day. What are you wearing? But I didn't see that so far.
You know, my daughter and I were at the mall, and we were driving through about like 3:30, and this young couple looked lovely, came walking through, but she had like a sequined, like floor length dress, and she looked like the sun. I mean, it was gold sequins. It was like just, whoa! I mean, just, it was, you couldn't help but notice. And then you had that blocking your vision for the rest of the day.
That epic dress.
It was amazing. Really, really lovely.
The sequins are a good thing for sure. So I saw the Avengers this weekend. I hear your son totally ditched on you.
Yeah. So we do this. We've been going to see like the Avengers films as they come out. And my son and my daughter, my two oldest, we do this. And this time it came, you know, Infinity War came out, and Chris, my oldest son, was like, I'm going to go with my buddies. They're all going. I want to go. And we just he was not willing to wait for us. He was so worried about them spoiling it for him that he just completely bailed on my daughter and I. And we are still sore about it. We're going to go see it this week. So
talk about sore. My brother thinks there. I'm dropping my pen behind the scenes. My brother totally ruined the Han Solo death for me in one of the Star Wars. He saw it before me. Hopped on there. Went and saw it. He's like, oh yeah, you know, you're going to be so upset when Han Solo dies. I'm like, what?
I did that. Okay, so like a year later, I was talking to my father-in-law, and I said, yeah, it was crazy how they killed Han Solo. And my father-in-law goes, wait, what? He still hadn't seen it. A year later. Okay, a year later, I can spoil it at that point.
Like, it's more than a year. So no spoiler alert here. Sorry if you missed that death.
Yeah. But I am so excited for it. And they're crushing all kinds of records with Infinity War right now.
This is insane, Chris. The biggest global opening in history. This is what's so incredible. $630 million. And they really topped that by over $100 million. The one following before that was in 2017. And we actually talked about it. The latest of the Fast and Furious franchise and movies. That's the closest up to this movie. And even just looking at the numbers overseas. So while, you know, historically, globally, it's made, you know, record numbers, what we've seen is that it's right above Jurassic World a couple years ago. So it's neat to see that these family-friendly movies are truly, I think, what's coming forward and is most popular. And I remember even we talked about The Fate of the Furious when it came out last year and kind of crushed the box offices again. Even that had some redemptive value and family-oriented elements.
You know, what I love about the Marvel films is they show a character arc. You know, mm-hmm. you have like Iron Man coming to grips with his mortality, and that line in Spider-Man where he says, if you're nothing without the suit, then you don't deserve the suit, right? Like mm-hmm. you have to, there's a sense of self. Like I think there are some really great lessons. Obviously, you know, like you have to watch it with your filter on. Like Iron Man is kind of a scummy human being. But we do see growth. We see him leaving that destructive lifestyle and then moving forward. We see Captain America mm-hmm. really facing those hard choices of doing the right thing when no one else is willing to do the right thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there are lessons in there that we need to continue to be teaching our young people. And again, as parents, we have to usher them and show them in. But it's interesting. I think the Marvel films of this generation in many ways are going to eclipse what Star Wars was for that generation, right?
Oh, that definitely makes sense. I totally see. I mean, what else do they have right now that's as big as it is? Like, I think a lot of people have jumped on the Star Wars bandwagon, but they don't get it. They maybe weren't around
right.
for the older movies. Well, and as I was looking at it, one really neat thing is, so they have this massive cast for the latest Avengers movie.
Yeah, choreography, like, man.
I can't even imagine how they were trying to play all of these different characters. But what was interesting is they kind of ended up pairing up a lot of the major roles. And so each kind of pairing had a separate part of the project, a separate part of the mission that they were working on. And you have, for example, Doctor Strange, and he's there with Tony Stark. And you see these two big egos, right? But also two men who want to do good, and they approach it in different ways. I thought it was really interesting to see how the butting of the heads up against each other really brought about, you know, good in their mission, but also challenges at
the
same time.
There's a big part of me that wants to plug my ears and just go la, 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 as you talk about this film, because I haven't seen it yet.
No, but I'm not ruining anything.
No, I know. Yeah, I know.
I promise. I'm very hesitant, but it was neat to see the different characters and how they run up next to each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, not ruining anything, but one of the ideas that was in the movie was the idea of eugenics and population control.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the bad guy ultimately was really working towards. And someone was like, no, that's not eugenics. I'm like, I think we have a different view of eugenics today, post-World War II. We think eugenics is to really kill a specific group of people for the sake of another group of people. But eugenics in and of itself is so that humanity can live better by eliminating some. It might be specific group of people or generalized group of people.
It's culling the herd, as it were.
Right. And, you know, this is the idea, you know, as we've been talking about the royal couple so much the last couple weeks, and more on that and what's been happening out in the UK later on in the show, you know, you see that there are a lot of governments who are in favor of population control. And in what way can we justify this?
Yeah, it's... You know, as we move, as Europe has moved more towards socialized medicine and a socialized understanding, in a sense, it's getting back to its roots. The government owns the people, mm-hmm. right? And so your rights are severely limited in that situation, because the government now is weighing the essentially the budgets versus your inherent dignity and inherent value. Mm-hmm. And they're making decisions based on does the cost of this care outweigh what you will cost the society? Mm-hmm. You don't have, in a situation like that, how can you say you have freedom?
Yeah, and you guys may remember when the healthcare debate was really ramping up, there was conversation and really problem with the idea of what are called death panels, right?
Right.
Where a panel of people would decide whether or not you get to live or die. And if you stay tuned in a little later in the show, we're going to be talking about Alfie Evans and just the tragedy that's taken place. But you guys, we've got to talk about this from two perspectives, and you'll hear this later on, from the perspective of parents' rights and from the perspective of eugenics and also euthanasia, right? They both go hand in hand. Like, you can't separate those two.
Can I tell you that the term euthanasia, I thought for years, was literally referring to youth in Asia?
Yes, I know a lot of people who would make jokes about that. Yeah, we're talking about the youth in Asia, but not those ones.
Yeah, it's the root is euthanized, right? When you euthanize like something, that's where it comes from. But for me, for years, I thought, what is wrong with the youth in Asia? What did they do? Why are we so upset about them?
That was an excellent clarification, because you know what? Sometimes us Catholics use jargon that other people maybe aren't on the same page with us at. Right?
Right.
And I think the vast majority of people aren't talking about euthanasia all the time. Maybe they hear the words physician assisted suicide, and then even then they think the Catholics are the crazy ones calling dignity with death physician assisted suicide. It's like, no, it's killing, right?
Right.
But,
yeah, we've got no problem with K-pop. We don't like killing people.
We do not like killing people.
Right.
Well, I'd love to hear more from you guys on what you thought of the Avengers movie. I mean, just record numbers. They're crushing it in theaters. I'm not actually a fan of sci-fi. I love fantasy. Sci-fi, man, I couldn't do Doctor Who. This one started to like, it wasn't my favorite Avengers movie. Although, yes, ending was different. Okay, got it.
Yeah, I love sci-fi. I love fantasy. This is the perfect time to be alive.
The perfect time to be alive.
Yeah. Superhero films all the time. I was born for this. I'm so excited.
I do have to say, I was bashing Ocean's 8 coming out, because I'm just sick of there always having to be a female spin on anything male today.
Right.
I actually saw a preview, though, for Ocean's 8 now, not just a poster. The movie looks fantastic. Still wish they would have a separate movie with a separate name and not be trying to replace the greatness.
But how much of this
Oceans.
Do you think is like it's easier to make tropical Skittles than it is to launch a new candy with a totally different brand, right?
Oh, yeah. They're working with a franchise that's already existing.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So people like Oceans, you're going to love Ocean's 8. You know, it's and so they can build something and maybe do something different. But you have the safety of it's an established brand. We can work with that.
Right. And they definitely have an interesting cast. I mean, mega cast. Anne Hathaway. They've got Sandra Bullock, among many others that will be starring in that coming up. So I think it'll probably be a good movie. I enjoy those heist movies. Hopefully clean cut. No endorsement of any movies
here. Can I real quick throw something out? So we've been watching Marvel films with the family.
Yes.
And something I found that I'm loving is if you have an Amazon subscription, you can get an add-on to your Chrome called, I think it's ClearPlay. and it will take out the profanity. You can, it'll skip scenes that are inappropriate. It'll do, and it's right there. It's it, and like every film we've watched right now has been free. Sometimes it asks a $1 or $2 donation. So I watched Spider-Man Homecoming with my 3-year-old. And there was no swear words. We took all the inappropriate jokes, all of the, you know, and even some of the graphic violence or even potty humor. It can skip that. So he can just love Spider-Man.
That's fantastic. What's the name of that resource again?
I believe it was ClearPlay.
And it's on Amazon. It's an add-on to your Amazon Prime. You guys, this is what we need. You can watch more movies and not make your kids feel totally isolated at times, right?
Yeah.
Just because there's this one scene that, you know, great movie. But besides that, why did they have to put it in there?
Oh,
I don't know.
The epic battle from Captain America Civil War. I had to have my daughter on standby because there's one point where Spider-Man yells, oh, expletive. And so we had to be there, like, quick, mute it. Unfortunately, we had subtitles on so everybody could read the word.
Which who watches a superhero movie with subtitles
when
on?
When you have 6 kids, you watch everything with subtitles on because
ooh,
the loudest, the house is so loud, you just want to know what's going on.
I have friends who love to watch movies and I go over to their house, they put the subtitles on, all I can see is the text the whole time. I miss the whole movie the entire time.
You know, I actually started doing it with British sitcoms because sometimes they're like
okay,
and you don't get it, so this is the translation into English for me.
I totally get it. You know, I had to do that when I was watching the show on Netflix called Monarchs of the Glen. It's put on by BBC and I just could not pick up sometimes on some of what they were saying. I'm like, man, like your accent, or they'd make little jokes but it's not an American joke that's common, but it was common to them. And so I'm sitting here going, wait, let me pause it, let me read it, let me think about this. Oh, okay, that was actually really funny.
Gotta Google that reference.
Coming up on the show in just a minute here, speaking of references, so much to say, and I don't even want to give it attention, but Michelle Wolf and the White House Correspondents' Dinner, oh my gosh, we can't ignore this. We've got to talk about it. We're going to be talking about this, Alfie Evans, and a little bit more coming up on the show. In the meantime, lots going on this summer. Chris, you're going to be all over. Where are you headed?
Yeah, well, I am so blessed to be part of Steuben Mill Conferences. So I'll be in St. Louis, main campus in Ohio, and then I'll also be doing some stuff in Catholic Family Land in Northern California. Awesome summer coming up.
Well, we'll be right back on Trending. Don't go away.
So up in San Francisco, they had this interesting event at one of the Episcopal cathedrals. They hosted a Beyoncé Mass.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmeray Millington. You're listening to Trending, the Beyoncé Mass. Chris, this is just insane. What do you think about this?
I get it that mainline Christianity is struggling, and the Episcopal Church in particular is struggling because they've lost so... what is an Episcopal Church? So, I mean, you know, you have so much variation in what that is, and...
So we'll start singing I'm a Survivor.
They did. They opened with I'm a Survivor. That was the professional processional was I'm a Survivor, really, is it a Beyoncé Mass or Destiny Child's Mass? But they did this, and they had huge turnout. And a lot of that, I guess, was due to Coachella. Beyoncé, you know, came and rocked the Coachella stage, and they're building on that. But you got to stop for a second and say, wait, what are we doing? What is this? You know, is this, and again, this is an Episcopal church. Don't start writing your bishop and saying this is blasphemous and we shouldn't do this. I'm talking about the Episcopal Church, like the Church of England in the United States, right? They did this.
Like any good Catholic, you see the word mass and you hear something somewhat sacrilegious, you're like, what?
Yeah, no.
What is this?
Bishop on speed dial.
But man, I look at this and I mean, people were freaking out, Chris, over Coachella a couple weeks ago. And they were saying like Beyoncé is alive. Right? I mean, Destiny Child's reunion, the Queen Bee. Well, now the Queen Bee is bringing it to church. She wasn't actually there, but this idea is just insane to me. Reverend Yolanda Norton actually teaches a course on Beyoncé and the Hebrew Bible. And I don't care how relevant you are trying to be. I mean, Trending does try to be somewhat relevant here by talking about cultural references. But come on, you guys.
See, the thing is, though, when you lose transcendent truth, like truth that is, when you lose, this is the truth, we're going to teach and proclaim the truth, then you don't have anything to grab onto. And so you have to just pick whatever trend is coming by to try to draw people in. And essentially, you're just doing a marketing class at that point. And so the Episcopal Church in particular has gotten so all over the place with what they believe and what they teach that their churches are empty. I mean, this is a huge issue that's happening in the church in Europe and the United States. Their churches are empty. And so they're trying to get whatever they can to get people in. And so they're this Beyonce mass, it's pop culture. People get excited about it. And then we can maybe throw a little Jesus at them too.
I remember hearing from a friend in high school about a church in Simi Valley, a Catholic church that actually used Disney princess music as part of the liturgy. Yes, I did say that. I was not there, but that's what she said. She thought it was great. I remember like I was probably maybe 13 arguing with her about why that was wrong. And here's the thing, Chris, you and I grew to love the mass. We grow to love the mass. We struggle our way through the mass today because we've chosen to tune in and figure out what does this mean in the mass? What is happening right now? Why does it matter? What is the significance, both old and new?
Yeah, it's funny you said Disney mass. I'm thinking like, can you feel the love tonight? I was trying to figure out what would make sense, like in the communion meditation, like, can you feel the love?
There's something about Lion King, because I was thinking Lion King too.
There's a very Christ story in redemption in there. But anyway.
Just thinking about them holding up the baby lion at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and look closer. You can see your father. The journey. But yeah, the reality is of the mass, like we have to get to what the mass is, and we have to come to understand what the mass is and what our role in the mass is. And I've said this on the show, like I think every episode, but like it's not a worship service. It's not a Bible study. It's not entertainment. It's worship of the Father through the Son. I mean, we're entering into the sacred mystery. Now, can you have different liturgical styles that reflect that? Sure. I mean, you can have a very kind of expressive evangelical worship during Mass. You can have a very Latin and a chant, more Tridentine mm-hmm. worship, but it has to be reverent, and it can never be entertainment, mm-hmm. right? And so when you have a Beyonce Mass, what you are doing is you're saying, come be entertained, mm-hmm. And it was part of a series of, like, what was it? Speaking truth to power, right? And so it was all about like these stories of African women in the Bible, an African woman's perspective on the Bible or something to that effect.
They wanted to appeal to the marginalized. So they said, we're talking about women. I'm sorry. Yes, women can be marginalized, but you guys, we're in the 21st century and we are in the United States of America. Like women in the United States are not oppressed in the way that women are in other countries, especially where they're being beheaded and killed for wearing certain things,
Well, and there's a difference between reading the Bible and saying, what does the Bible speak to me in my circumstance, as opposed to I'm going to interpret the Bible, it's exegesis versus eisegesis, right? Like, what do I want the Bible to say versus what does the Bible actually say?
Well, and can I just throw this out there for anyone struggling? I'm laughing. You're going to hear in a second. We're getting these comments that are just cracking me up. I'm actually going to throw it too. So one of the comments by Christian, he says, let it go would be some liturgical dancing. That would be sweet.
Only if you're wearing like a unitard of some sort.
Okay. We're not getting into the liturgical dancing in church because, man, we're just going to pass that up. But here's what I was going to suggest.
Another special episode we could do in the future.
Liturgical dancing? No, okay?
Tune into the Facebook Live on that one, folks. Yeah. It is going to be worth it.
In between segments, just wait.
I'm bringing my ribbons. Anyway, no. Just get back on focus.
Wait, are you saying ribbons? Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh, don't even. I will be lit for a second there. So what I was going to suggest for Mass, I've talked about this before. We go to Mass to be consumed, not to consume. We're not consumers when we go to church. Well, here's one way that I remember very early on I was taught that really changed the way I would go to church. And someone told me, echo. When you go to church, echo everything you hear. So as they're saying something at Mass, you repeat those exact same words in your head. It does two things. One, it makes sure that you're actually paying attention, but two, it gives you a moment to chew on what you're hearing and then link it to what's currently being said. And so as I'm hearing the Mass, I'm repeating what are the words that Father's saying. Now, this can get real annoying when that sweet little lady next to you is muttering the entire Mass. Yeah, echoing in your head, okay?
Right. Yeah, you don't need to consecrate from your seat.
Please. You know what's happened to you, though. Not necessarily consecration. When, like, Father's saying something and you accidentally say it out loud, you're like, oh, wait, that was supposed to be silent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, through him, with him, in him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit. I always feel like my heart wants to sing that with the, and I'm like, can't, that's not, that's, shh, quiet. Goodbye. In your head, Chris. In your head.
I do love that moment at Mass. And I think that, you know, maybe because of the work that each of us do, this moment where it's like, I feel like we're reconsecrating everything we do, the people we speak to God. Like, we're praying for you guys throughout our Mass. And for me, that's one of those moments where, like, everything I'm doing, it's not about me. And I'm just offering these people to you, Lord.
And that moment of through him, with him, in him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit, all glory and honor is yours through Christ our Lord. That sums up what's happening. Right. Mm-hmm. We, through Christ, in Christ, we are offering all of our, all this prayer and worship to the Father. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's just, it is at that moment. I feel like, God, I just want to explode with that.
Yeah. That love the moment. And you guys, these are the moments that we've got to just reach out. And what are those moments in the liturgy? Maybe you share that live for anyone on Facebook Live. By the way, if you're listening to the show, Facebook Live, YouTube Live totally gets like the special in between segments. Our poor producer back here, he's sitting here, you know, watching, making sure everything's happening. I'm like, oh yeah, by the way, that was only Facebook Live. That was not on the actual show.
Thank goodness.
So more content. Yeah.
I always feel like, anyway, Facebook Live.
Facebook Live. More of this is going to come, but I want to start talking about something maybe a little more serious here. Michelle Wolf, I'm sorry. I just cannot understand how in any way your conversation was appropriate. So for those who don't know, which I don't know how you don't know, the White House Correspondents' Dinner that takes place for the press annually is usually a moment where the press comes together. It's supposed to be a moment of really peacefulness, right? We can all agree. We can all laugh for a second. So there's usually a roast. Now, Chris, I personally am not big fans of roasts. Maybe if you're roasting like a character in a movie and making jokes about the stupid things in the movie. But I think a lot of the time, Chris, it kind of just ends up being cruel. Well, it wasn't just cruel. It was crass.
Yeah, no, she, you know, she's joking about abortion in the most horrific way. And, you know, I think if there's anything this correspondent dinner has done is has shown just the disconnect between people in the media and the common person, right? It's like there's two different worlds. And, you know, again, you know, it used to be the language was that abortion was supposed to be rare and safe, right? Mm-hmm. And now you're making jokes about, you know, you really gotta hit that kid, you know? Again, I don't know how anybody in good conscience could sit there and laugh, right?
You know, Michelle Wolf makes fun of Vice President Mike Pence. Now, I get it, it's a roast, but she makes fun of him for thinking abortion is a murder. And she says, don't knock it till you try it. And she goes on talking about how you've got to get that baby out of there. And she's making, you know, these movements and gestures with her hand. And in the midst of a joke, you're going, that's a life. And that is an experience that many women and men have gone through together in the life of their unborn child. And you are making fun of an experience that is totally tragic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, to make light of crushing a baby's skull, you know, to end its life. And it's just, I can't think of any situation where that is appropriate.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. As I was sitting here watching clip after clip, there were just mean things said about various people in all spectrums, both sides of the spectrum. But, you know, the talk to begin with, I finally said, you know, I need to just watch the whole thing. I'm just watching segments. So I sat down, I watched it. Do not watch it, you guys. I think that it totally ruined my day yesterday. And I should probably talk about that in a second because there's a quote that I'm needing to work on not being kind of ruffled up. But from the beginning, it's making references to pornography. It's making references about orgasms and sex the entire time in a joke that was so inappropriate for that full 20-something minutes. I was literally lowering the volume on my computer because I was mortified that I was even allowing this to go through my head.
Right. And again, this is someone who was picked by the Hollywood, or not the Hollywood, by the Press Association. Like, this was someone they chose because they wanted this. This was what they all thought was funny. And you only had, I think, only a handful of people who actually got up and left. Like, one or two were referenced in the stories I was reading. We say this all the time. You hear this all the time where people say the media is biased. The media is biased. The media is biased. And this is not a Republican-Democrat conversation. But I think to say the media is biased against traditional moral values, I don't think you can make the argument that it's not.
Absolutely. I think that we will have more on this to come later in the show. We're also going to be talking about the Sydney Swan star, Gary Rowan, and really awesome story about his family and the twins they had in the struggle, as well as Alfie Evans and how joy can come in the midst of suffering. We'll be right back on Trending with Chris and Timmeray. Do not go away and share this episode with a friend in the meantime. Although I don't want to give any more attention to Michelle Wolf and that dinner and just the crassness of it, I do have a couple of things to say, Chris. You're listening to Trending. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Mueller. This is Timmeray Millington. Man, you know, Michelle Wolf, one of the things I was looking at the end of the conversation, Margaret Talib, who is kind of the president of bringing this woman here to speak, I think president of the Press Association, whatever it is, she comes up and just says, thank you very much for supporting us and celebrating essentially the First Amendment and free speech. And I looked at this, Chris, and I just thought, this has nothing to do with the First Amendment and free speech. And in light of the Me Too campaign, you are bringing someone up to talk to journalists who have just been through a year of having to cover some of the most tragic and filthy content. You are just going to sit here and make crass jokes the whole time?
Let's look at the roots of our Constitution. Why do we have a First Amendment? So that you can have the freedom of political speech, you can have the freedom of worship, you can do those things. The First Amendment was not put into the Constitution so that we could just say profanity and make jokes about sex. I mean, now, unfortunately, that conversation does become protected, but we need to teach our children, we need to teach our families, we need to stand for it in our communities that though someone may have the right to say that, we don't laugh about it, we don't encourage it, we don't pay for it, God forbid. We don't hold that up. And I think at times we do have the right to regulate what's happening in public to say, okay, you may have the right to say that, but you don't have the right to infringe on my children's right to live a life that's not scandalized constantly either.
Absolutely. You know, I think that I look at this entire situation and coming from a background in journalism, you know, like we're part of that world, right? And we have a responsibility not to defame a character, not to be, say slanderous things. And I think it crossed over the line of making jokes and it being a roast to just saying filthy things about people and making cruel comments. You know, you can destroy a person's reputation very, very easily. And, you know, man, the things that were said, I would never even want to repeat in front of another person. But because it's so crass, we're having to get to the point where we've got to talk about these very divisive things that I think a lot of people are coming out saying, hey, where's your class? Where's your sense of respect? Where's your sense of modesty in this conversation?
I was just getting coffee before the show. And a guy, a salesperson, parking lot, he was going through his sales stuff in the back of his truck. He's got the rap playing in his car. And again, this is not a judgment about music, but the language that was just playing out loud for the parking lot was just, come on, man. Like, that's like, this is the way you're representing yourself. This is the way you're representing your company because you're here working. And I have a right to not be assaulted by that. And again, right. If I started yelling those words at you, it would be technically an assault, right? Like, and so I just think we all need to step back and go, yeah, there's a freedom, but freedom needs to be exercised responsibly.
Absolutely. You know, I've got to say, we haven't covered this next story yet. And part of it is because there's been so much happening rapidly and to cover it and then have it be live in different areas. We're talking about it now. And that is the story of Alfie Evans, a little boy, 23 months old, who, man, Chris, I just look at what the British courts have done. And my heart is breaking. This is a issue in two areas that we mentioned before, parents' rights in one end and euthanasia, also eugenics, right, on the other end.
Right. It's a tragic story of a healthy little boy who got sick and was basically put into a state where the doctor said he was in a vegetative state, right? I think his parents argued that there were many signs pointing to that not being true. The doctor said he would not live for more than, you know, an hour or something off of life support. They then decided to take him off of life support and food and water. So basically no oxygen, no food, no water. He lived for 4 days, for over 4 days. And the sick thing about this was there were people saying, bring him to our hospital. The Vatican moved Italy. The Vatican, in cooperation with Italy, gave this young man citizenship in Italy and said, bring him to us. We will care for him.
They had a helicopter standing by there waiting to transport him, but the courts would not let him go.
Right. No. And that, see, that's what I mean. When you're in this socialized state, you don't have personal freedom. because they couldn't, again, and this now, this young man is a citizen of another country and they won't release him, mm-hmm. right? He belongs to the government. The government says what his fate is. And again, this wouldn't have cost the British people anything to do this because he was leaving their system, going to a different system, and I guess being taken care of by the Pope at that point, God bless him. And no, we won't let it happen. We can't. Why? Because we're so invested in this system. We can't pull the plug on our state-funded murder of the helpless.
The good thing about the story is I think that it has woken a lot of people up. Man, I was there with people who were in adoration praying for Alfie Evans and his family, praying for the government that we do not see situations like this taking place, praying for his parents. I know people who were fasting. It was a call to prayer and action. And some of us might have been more active online writing. Some of us might have been praying. But it was a reminder that we are our brother's keeper. And there's this responsibility of solidarity and speaking up. And when I look at this, so a little more detail for those who maybe haven't been following this story. Essentially, there in Britain, what happens is if you are a medical patient, the patient himself, him or herself, actually does have rights. But in this instance, since the child could not speak for himself, he did not have any rights. And his parents could not speak in his behalf based on how things work out there. So essentially, the state now had full responsibility and say over what treatment he did or didn't receive. And so the parents are sitting here saying, they really were clear. There's not treatment that he could be trying that should be given. There have been tests that should have been done that did not take place. A number of attorneys around the world, as well as medical professionals, are saying there's more that could be done to see what we can do to try and save this baby's life. But the British courts, over and over in multiple cases over the last month or so, have denied the rights of Alfie Evans and his parents and sentenced him to death. I had a friend, Chris, who commented, and as he heard what was happening, he goes, "That sounds like active murder."
Oh, absolutely. Again, if you were a caregiver for someone who is in this state of need, right, and they were a person in your home, and you decided one day to say, you know what, I'm just not going to feed them anymore. Mm-hmm. See how long they last. I don't think they can last without me feeding them, so I'm just going to stop feeding them. You would go to jail for the rest of your life.
You would, right. Yeah, in no way would that be acceptable. And the way that we are allowing, and I really do mean this, you guys, I want you to hear this, we are allowing for governments to take over and step in and claim their own responsibility for your children. Look at how it's happened in the education system. Just the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about how Orange County is now trying to say that you can't pull your children out of a crass, inappropriate, and unbalanced sexual education programs. When that's actually a lie, it's a bullying scare tactic, because as of 2015, there were clear amendments made that you can pull your child out if they're trying to tell you that you can't, because they're trying to force sex education down the throats of your young children to indoctrinate them.
Right. And again, that was the fear a lot of people had with the United States healthcare system, was that we would be in a similar situation to Europe and to places like England, which was used as a model, right? Mm-hmm. Where we're losing our parental rights, and to say, no, I will go as far as I have to for the life of my child. And in the United States, I have the right to do that. In England, you don't.
So that's one perspective from the rights of parents, but we've got to also talk about this from the perspective of euthanasia. And so that's also, you know, there's physician-assisted suicide, where a physician is working with the patient and the patient decides, I no longer want to live, and together with his physician, he then takes a lethal dosage of medication to end his life with the intent to end his life, again, with that lethal dosage. Then there's euthanasia, where other people are choosing to intentionally kill a patient. That could be the poor, that could be the sick, that could be someone in some sort of coma. Now, this brings into question some really important conversation about moral ethics at the end of life. So, Chris, part of that, and I think that we've got to throw some examples out here for our listeners, because this is an area that can become a little confusing sometimes. How do we handle end-of-life situations, especially, say, where a man at the end of his life is dying and they know that maybe he's much older, he is definitely going to die, and say someone comes in, well, let's just mercifully end his life sooner. And so the decision can be, let's let him quote unquote die with dignity, and we'll allow him to, or we'll give him a dosage of medication that's so high that it's going to end his life with the intent to kill.
Right.
Now that's different, right, from saying, okay, this man, or for example, I'll use a example of my grandmother. My great grandmother, I was blessed to be with her in her last months. I got to help take care of her. We were blessed with many extra days and hours. And while there was suffering, there was also great joy. There's actually a tradition where the dying would bless all of the family members at the end of the day. And so I would be there and she would bless us over our foreheads with a cross and she'd pray over us. I was always very happy because she would stay longer blessing me over and over again sometimes going, "Thank you, Grandma. She must know I need the prayers." But one of the things that happened, I remember, is they started giving her a little bit of morphine to help with the pain. And Chris, I remember at one point, I was quite young, I'm going, "She's not breathing as well." Now, I ended up realizing and came to understand, well, they're giving her just a little bit of medication to help her with some of the pain. And in my mind, I'm going, "You're killing her." Right. And I was very upset. But what was happening is they were giving her a small amount that could not kill her, but would make it a little bit more challenging at times to breathe. Now, that's different from a dose of morphine with the intent and the amount to kill.
Right. There's a difference between treating pain and euthanizing someone.
Exactly. And so this is where we have to also talk about ordinary versus extraordinary care, which we'll cover when we come back. But I just to talk about that, Chris, for a second, this idea of euthanizing and helping people through their pain, given the circumstances. So the disproportionate means, right, what is proportionate and what isn't proportionate to what's happening in the circumstances.
Right. And normal palliative care is going to help that person to be comfortable towards the end of their life. It's gonna be to help to keep them as healthy as they can possibly be. And then again, if they're dealing with chronic pain, it's going to be treating that pain so that they can live with as much pain in as pain-free a situation as possible. And there's always that balance of, are we treating the pain or are we going overboard? And again, it's a challenging area of medicine. There's no question about that. But the other option is to say, gosh, it just takes so much work, you know, and there's a lot of resources here and they're in pain anyway, so there's no value from them. So we're just going to click, 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 and we'll just end this one real fast.
Those end of life moments are very serious, and having someone who is responsible for your care, who is going to do so lovingly and morally, and who will take the time to do it. I think that that's something we have to remember, morally taking the time to help you in your last days, not to end your life, even because they think it's going to end in just a few weeks, possibly. You're listening to Trending. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. We'll be right back with just a little bit about Alfie Evans. You're listening to Trending. This is Timory Millington. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Mueller, and we're talking about Alfie Evans, who just this past weekend died after a long journey with the British courts, who denied the rights of his parents to choose what type of care he would or would not receive. They also received to continue to do tests and provide care for the child. They even took him off of his food, water, and breathing machine, and they said, well, he won't live with it anyway, so we might as well take him off.
Well, and what's so crazy is they're arguing that withdrawing life support from him is going to make him more comfortable, right? Denying him food and water is going to make him more comfortable. Now, I have never been in a situation where starving to death has made me more comfortable.
No, it's active killing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. But literally, doctors in the UK system are saying withdrawing life support's not killing someone. It's redirecting care to make them more comfortable and give them a more dignifying life.
Well, and just to be clear here too, in this case, this was a young baby who had not even received a number of tests that he should have received, who could have gone through other treatment. So some people might say, well, it was only the breathing machine and them giving him food and water, like intravenously, not on his own, that kept him alive. So some people say, well, those aren't necessarily ordinary means to keep him alive. That's not ordinary care. Well, in this case, given the circumstance, that actually would be ordinary care.
Right.
However, say a person was in a car accident, doesn't have the ability to eat on their own, right? And they're now having to use a machine to make them breathe and to feed them. And this is going on for years, right? For years, they are dependent on this support to keep them alive. They're in a vegetative state. It's been a long time. They've tried multiple forms of care. Well, that's when, given the circumstances, you could choose to remove the extraordinary care that's taking place to try and keep this life alive. And then the life would die naturally on his or her own if the machines were not there keeping him alive.
Right. Which in Alfie's case, we saw wasn't the case. Like, he didn't need extraordinary means. He just needed to be given normal support that any human infant would need.
Well, and think about what the nurses said, Chris. The nurses were walking in. So for those 4 days, he lived without food, water, and without the oxygen that was helping to keep him alive. Well, he was living without it. The nurses would come in over and over again. And the parents were commenting. The parents would say, wow. They were amazed by how this kid was doing. And in the meantime, Chris, you know what the hospital did? The hospital removed couches and seating from the hospital room so that the parents couldn't even stay there. They then instead had to sleep on the floor. And there are a number of arguments taking place between the hospital and between the parents.
You know, I've got an infant at home. He eats, I'd say, every hour to 20 minutes. I mean, he eats a lot, right? If he didn't eat for 4 days, I don't know if he'd make it. You know, if he didn't drink water for 4 days, I don't know if he'd make it. He's perfectly healthy. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him, but he just couldn't survive in that situation. I don't know how you can, in good conscience, say that this is care for his comfort, you know? And then again, yeah, the games are playing with these poor people who are in just the worst possible situation in such a powerlessness to say, we're going to take couches out. We're going to take all the chairs out. We're going to try to make this, get you out of here. And so you don't have to be present at your child's, state-inflicted death is just horrific.
It's making my stomach turn, and it should be making you sick as well. You know, there's so much more that could be said talking about the hospital and how Alder High Children's Hospital has been caught with having used and basically the organs of living children, harvesting their organs to sell for medical research, you guys. They were then having different children that they were saving and essentially stockpiling for medical research without the consent of the parents. This hospital has been under contention a number of times in the past, and it makes you wonder what's going on, especially now that they will not release the body to the parents.
Wow, I was not aware of that.
They won't release the body.
Stroke.
So people are saying, what did you do to that child? What experiments were you performing? What had you maybe harvested from that child's body? We do not know right now. We don't know what type of experimental treatment they may have been trying. You guys, man, there's no, I think, good way to see the ending of this life, this baby. We know just has to be in the hands of our Blessed Virgin Mary and in the hands of the Father. And please, I'm begging you to pray for those parents and pray for the hope and joy for them to be able to move on and trust in our Lord and find healing in Him in the midst of this journey. And God willing, they go to Italy and get the heck out of there is how I feel.
Mercy. You know, I don't want to get super political, but I think as it's one of the things we need to be aware of that, like, your rights as an individual aren't the guaranteed, right? Like, right. This is not a universal thing. And in fact, it's a very rare thing that you would have the rights that we have in our modern political, American political context. Like, if you look at human history, the individual does not have basic human rights. It's not considered inherent. It's not considered part of being a human being. That's rare. And so we have this. We need to protect this. We need to be very aggressive in just paying attention to what litigation, what laws are being passed, what's being promoted, what's being taught in our schools, because these things can be taken away and we can end up in a situation like they are in the UK, where they were promised this wonderful healthcare system. It's going to take care of everybody. It's going to be so great. And now we have a situation where basically they're deciding that this little boy isn't worth the time or money. His parents don't get a say. He can't even go to Italy to get care, and we're just going to starve him to death.
You know, I look at this and I look, where can we find hope? And I think of, reading the New Testament and sacred scripture. I think specifically of Romans chapter 14, where it's talking about how none of us live to ourselves. None of us die to ourselves, but we essentially live to the Lord. And if we die, we die to the Lord as well. And looking in that moment that our life does not belong to us. We are stewards of our life, offering ourselves up to the Father. And even in the midst of tragedy, in the midst of suffering, in the midst of pain and drawn out journeys and oppression, whatever it might be, you guys, you and I may be called, like Alfie, in some way to see a circumstance of true martyrdom. This is martyrdom, right? They were trying to stand for their child. They were trying to stand in good faith through it. And we have to remember that we die to the Lord, that we belong to the Lord. And that at the end of the day, He's the one who is our hope in the midst of everything that we face.
So, another story that was in the news recently, and this actually comes out of Australia, is there's an Australian rules football player named, I just lost the name, Gary Rowan. And they just had this, again, another heartbreaking situation. His wife's pregnant with twins, and they find out that one of them has a birth defect that will more than likely cost this child's life shortly after birth. What do you do in that situation? You know, and the beautiful story is they made the decision, and I don't think they really had any choice, carry both those children to term and to pray for the lives that are inside of them and hope for the best, but be ready for the worst. And in this case, their daughter Willow passed away shortly after birth. But what's beautiful is you read what happened, and they're talking about how much they learned from this little life in the very short time they had her. They're talking about how do you move forward in saying things like we the best advice we've received from friends is to celebrate Willow just like we celebrate our daughter who lived, and just to celebrate her life, to celebrate her birthdays, because she's still our daughter. Right. And she's not an accident. She's not something that didn't happen. She's still our daughter. She's still loved by us. She's still always going to be part of our story. And like they said, our hope is that our daughter will run around when she's a little girl yelling, "I have a twin, I have a twin," even though she never really met her sister outside of the womb.
Look at the joy in the midst of this. You know, Willow, 10 to 13 weeks, was diagnosed with anencephaly, and that's a fatal neural tube defect that basically prevented the development of the brain and the skull. And you think about it, your brain is so much a part of your body. It impacts the development of the rest of your body. And so the expectation this baby's going to die, like Chris was saying, yet the parents looked at that, and in most circumstances, and they were even advised that you could abort your child. And in most circumstances, they would. And here, these were identical twins. So they shared one placenta. So there wasn't the ability to kill one without killing the other. Praise the Lord that these parents said, no, we are going to walk through this journey. We're going to truly accept what has really been given to us as a challenging circumstance. And we're going to love our child to the end.
Right. You know, and again, what they said was like, we want to cherish all that time we had together. It's those little moments that we know we're going to never get back, and we'll forever cherish that time. Like and again, as a parent, like you look at little Alfie Evans and his family, and like, I don't think they regret their child.
Right.
I don't think they regret those moments. And you mentioned your grandmother living with you guys until she passed, and a similar situation. My grandma lived with us until she passed away. I don't regret any of those moments. Mm. You know, I don't regret the times when life was, you know, a little bit challenging, or when my grandma had dementia and before she passed, that, you know, there were times and there were hard times. And I know it weighed on my mom and it was difficult, but we don't regret it. She was never a burden. She was always grandma. And this was a point and a stage in life. We loved her and she loved us.
I remember, you know, you're bringing up a memory. I remember one time I was dropped off at my grandmother's house, and I think my grandpa dropped me off and he took off and just, you know, assumed I would make it into the house, right? Well, I get up to the door and the door's locked, but the screen door, it's like a big, thick metal screen door. Like, there's no breaking through this thing. And I'm knocking, I can see grandma there. I'm trying to look through this big, dark screen. I'm like, "Grandma, it's Tim Ray." She couldn't remember who I was.
Right.
And so sure enough, she didn't let me in the house. So I sat up against the screen door for a few hours, sitting there talking to her. And you talk about these moments, would we regret the pain and the sorrow? Oh my gosh, I could sit there. Grandma doesn't remember who I am. I'm stuck outside. I was young. I didn't have a cell phone. You know, no, those moments where my grandma thought she was talking to a total stranger. And then she ended up appreciating this conversation. She's a little bit of a unique personality, kind of mean, naturally just one of those mean personalities. But she loved you. I think she was meaner to you if she loved you. I remember just sitting there talking to her. You look at these moments in the Sydney Swan star, Gary Rowan, and how he says, "We're always the parents of twins. I'm always a daughter of my grandmother, no matter what the suffering and the sorrow was. I always have those moments with her," just like he has those moments, those 5 hours with his little daughter, Willow, before she died. And they celebrated the life and the family they had. And I look, Chris, and this is a Christian life. Whatever time we have, we do it willingly in love and honoring our Lord.
Yeah, you know, the reading last Sunday was, or 2 Sundays ago, depending on when you're hearing this, is "I'm the Good Shepherd," right? And I give my life for my sheep. No one takes it from me. Mm-hmm. I lay it down freely. And, you know, we think of Jesus and we forget that we're called to be a little Christ in our world. We're called not just to be followers, but to be imitators. And how that plays out in our family life is that we lay down our lives for each other. And so if you're caring for a special needs child, there's a stewardship of a good shepherd in there to lovingly give life. And there is sacrifice to that. If you're a father waking up at 5 a.m. to go out and provide for family, there's sacrifice in that. This is how we're called to live our lives as Christians. This is the witness we're supposed to give.
Praise the Lord. Rejoice always, you guys. This is Trending. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington.